Welcome to All Sides with Dan Fisher. The arts, they are not necessarily for the faint of pocketbook. And if your life has been crippled by one of the many social ills that plague our society, they may appear like from another world. But the arts are cut from the human experience and can be employed to improve it. Coming up, we'll hear from Columbus Jazz Orchestra Artistic Director Byron Stripling and choreographer Alexis Wilson about their concert to end homelessness coming up this weekend. If you want more information about that, go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Joining us now to talk about the intersection of the arts and social change is Paul Griffin. He is the founder and president of the Possibility Project in New York City, where the arts bring teenagers together to change their communities. Professor Paul Griffin also teaches about the use of performing arts for social change at Sarah Lawrence College. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. How are you?
Very well, thanks. One of the classes you teach at Sarah Lawrence is called Using the Performing Arts for Social Change. When did it occur to you that the relationship between the performing arts and social change had the substance to establish a course on it?
Well, I think what we recognized, I've been working with young people using the performing arts with them for the last 20 years, and we consistently had young people asking to learn more. And a lot of folks in their 20s would come to us looking to do this work. I thought, wouldn't it be worthwhile to begin to teach it, not just do it, but also teach it with the hope that we could inspire and educate some young people to get out there and do more.
What type of coursework? This could either be, it sounds like it could be a really great class, but what kind of coursework does a class like that entail?
Yeah, well, there's really five. In that specific course, there's really five elements to it. One is engaging in the creative process itself. It's a little different from sort of a commercial or entertainment-focused creative process. So we go through a lot of social change exercises and a lot of the facilitation that takes place when you're using the arts in that context. Then we talk about translating or that process to the stage. Because the decision-making aesthetically and in terms of process are very different for the performance, and audience expectations and what the impact of the show is very different. So we look a lot at how you translate that to the stage. We also look at the business of the performing arts. There's very few institutions that focus on using the performing arts in this context. So most of our young people will have to be entrepreneurs. So we do some entrepreneurship training so they can get out there and begin to build the infrastructure to do those projects. And then each student in the class chooses a social issue, a population, geography, or an issue that they want to focus on. And over the course of the year, they develop a blueprint for a project so that at the end of the class, they have something actionable that they could go out into the world and actually do. And then throughout, we're really looking at all of the elements of what is it, what makes a successful arts project in this way, and how do you do it, and why is it that the arts have the capacity to make a difference?
So why is it that the arts have the capacity to make a difference?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's some things that particularly the performing arts have inherent in them that lend themselves to this kind of endeavor. One is voice. It's about expression, right? It's about raising your voice. It's about saying out loud what's going on. The arts have always been willing to tackle tough issues. And, you know, the performing arts in particular, again, have a long history of examining conflict, right? Protagonist, antagonist, all the great tragedies. And so we have the capacity, the skill, and the means by which to raise our voices around those very important issues that we have. And then what we do is we create a shared experience around that. So people gather into communal spaces to listen to music, to watch performances, to view artists at work, raising their voices about these things, expressing about these things. And by we then all walk away from that with a sort of tangible thing with which to talk about very difficult stuff. And, you know, there's myriad examples of that, from movies to plays where you know, we've now have something that we can connect on that allows us to, at a minimum, raise awareness about it. Beyond that, spur folks to action. And I think, at bottom, all of that really is a model for change, right? I mean, if you think about a group of people coming together, they don't know each other, they know each other a little bit, and then over the course of time, they create something that they then present out in the world to audiences. And that work of art that they've created takes on meaning for everyone. And they literally have created that from nothing. And so one could look at that process, and it is a process of change, you know, of alchemy, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But in the arts, change doesn't just happen. We call it creating. And so if we can begin to think about social change not as just change, but as creating, it becomes a creative act. And so we're moving, for instance, in the case of homelessness, we aren't just saying we need to change homelessness. We're saying, how do we create a different approach to this? How do we create a community where homelessness is no longer? And those are ways in which the arts, I think, are particularly adept at these things. And I would also say, too, that the collaborative or community aspect of the arts is often underestimated, the power of it. And I think just that alone, bringing people together around this is a big deal.
My guest is Paul Griffin. He's founder and president of the Possibility Project in New York. He also teaches about the use of performing arts for social change at Sarah Lawrence College. So we're talking about this hour. Coming up, we will be joined by Alexis Wilson and Byron Stripling, who have put together a show. It's called A Concert to End Homelessness. You want more information about that, you can go to our website at wosu.org/allsides. I love what you're saying. I'm interested that college students are interested in it and wonder because I'm not sure I would have appreciated it when I was a college student. I don't know. It certainly wasn't available then. But what sort of people do you attract? Is it just artists, people in the arts, or are there different kinds of people? Not everyone is lucky enough to be creative.
Yeah. Well, I teach in the performing arts department,
so most
of my students are performing arts, but I do get students from other areas who are just curious about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's really two things. One, I think young people in general tend to be idealistic, which I think is a good thing. And I think they're trying to sort out how to hang on to that as they grow up,
mm-hmm.
if you will. And I think that's one aspect of it. I think the other aspect is for artists, we tend to be trained and raised on self-interest. We're our own product out in the world, right? We're always having to sell ourselves through auditions and all of that. And I think for a lot of young artists, that isn't enough, or it feels so self-centered that it feels uncomfortable. I think they feel like there's more, because most artists get into it because of the impact either it has made on them and the audience, or the impact of the process they're going through, and they want to share that impact. But I think that the commercial arts don't offer the vehicle for making the impact that most of us, it certainly was true for me, feel. So I think young people are very interested to learn, how can I use this thing I love to make an impact in a very real way on other folks that's intentional and that makes a difference? And I think those are the two reasons that I think folks come to the class. And then I think once they're in the class, and the world starts to open up and they start to see all of the possibilities, they just get more and more excited.
You know, I want to bring in my other guests right now, because they're like a couple of bobbleheads here sitting in the studio, nodding to everything you're saying. And I would love to hear what their thoughts are along with yours, Paul Griffin. It's Byron Stripling. He's a renowned trumpeter and artistic director of the Columbus Jazz Orchestra. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, nice to be here.
And also Alexis Wilson. She's dancer, choreographer, author, choreographer for this show we've been talking about coming up this weekend. Alexis, thanks for joining us.
Great to be
so
here.
Nodding heads about the self-interest part of being an artist.
Well, you know, I think there's always, as an artist, you want to know what you do in the world is relevant. You can play, like he said, self-interest and all that. But really, there's a bigger picture that you're always trying to get out there. And so that's one reason we're doing this concert. For me as an artist, I would see homeless people walking around and like, how can I help that as an artist? I can't maybe write big checks like a lot of people do, but maybe there's something that I can do. And I think artists have always done that. They've always used their art to elevate the society and to elevate the culture and shown things that a lot of people can't show, using their music, using their art to do that.
And yet, Alexis, so much of it often seems so distant to a lot of people who can't afford to go to the shows and that kind of a thing. So it separates you all the more, or it can.
It does. But I think this, you know, the concept, especially because we have the Columbus Jazz Orchestra, of music is such a universal magnet for everybody, whether you're, you know, from whatever walk of life you're coming from. It's just, it's a wonderful way to bring people together.
And of course, Byron, the way you operate it, it's you bring the audience in and you let us enjoy it. So, emote a lot along with you, and it's always a lot of fun. Paul Griffin, can you tell us about the Possibility Project? You said it's been around for about 20 years, and it involves young people directly. Tell us why you founded it and what you do there.
Yeah, so the Possibility Project began originally down in Washington, D.C., in response to a tremendous amount of violence and racial hatred that was happening there. There was really nothing happening. This was when D.C. was the murder capital of the United States. And young people were looking for things to do, and there was really nothing for them to do in response to that. And so it really grew out of that, in response to that. It was really a sort of artistic response to that, raising young people's voices about what was really going on and why, and what they, as young people, could and needed to do. And what we do now, you know, fast forward, we've evolved a bit, but we bring together large groups of teenagers, diverse groups of teenagers who go through a 10-month process that's focused on transforming all the negative forces in their lives and communities into positive action. And through that process, they learn to build relationships across difference, resolve the conflicts they face, engage in creating community impact and leading. And the way they do that is by working together to write and perform an original musical from the stories of their lives, and then conduct community action projects offstage, if you will, to make an impact on issues they care about. And it's a tremendous success. About 90% of our young people have gone on to college. 99% have graduated from high school. So, and we have three programs with 140 teenagers, including one for young people in foster care. And this year, we're putting out there in the world our first film. So we took one of our original musicals, created by our young people in foster care, and that group of young people adapted their musical into a screenplay, and then we shot it with a film as them as the lead actors. So we're expanding a little bit to try and increase the reach, particularly on that issue of foster care.
So what's the name of the film, and how can we see it?
The film is Know How. We've finished it, but now we're sort of figuring out this is the festival season, so we're figuring out what festivals it will play in, and then later this year we will release it, and we're trying to figure out how exactly we're going to do that and looking for partners to do that. But we're on Facebook, and there's a website and things like that if folks want to look it up.
Well, Paul Griffin, thank you so much for joining us today and telling us about that and sharing your thoughts about the arts and social change.
You bet, Anne. It's a pleasure.
Paul Griffin, founder and president of the Possibility Project in New York City, and also a professor at Sarah Lawrence College, where he teaches about the using performing arts to help with social change. We'll be right back and continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
What a day of rejoicing that would be when we all see Jesus. We'll sing and shout the victory when we all get to heaven. What a day of rejoicing that would be when we all see Jesus.
Once again, welcome to All Sides with Dan Fisher. That's a little taste of the song When We All Get to Heaven, with Byron Stribling providing the vocals and Bobby Floyd on the keyboard. It's one of the songs from A Concert to End Homelessness, this weekend presented by the Jazz Arts Group in partnership with the Community Shelter Board, with the Columbus Jazz Orchestra led by Byron Stribling. For more information, go to the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Joining me still in the studio to talk about the show is trumpeter and artistic director of the Columbus Jazz Orchestra, Byron Stribling. Welcome.
How you doing, Ann?
And with us still, dancer, choreographer, and author Alexis Wilson. Alexis, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
By the way, I haven't mentioned it yet, but they're a couple. They're a married couple. So how convenient is that?
Byron, you told us what sort of the essence of the inspiration was for this concert. But when did it actually occur to you, hey, let's put on a show?
Well, really, I was sitting at dinner with Michelle Heritage, and she began telling me that the fact that we could actually end homelessness. The name of the concert is a concert to end homelessness. It's not a concert to help homelessness, to maybe homelessness will get better concert. It's a concert to end homelessness. And I think that's important distinction to make. And Michelle can really explain how we can do that specifically. But I was inspired by that. That's an important thing to know, that we have the tools in Columbus, Ohio, to end homelessness. So at a dinner with her, talking about, well, how could we raise awareness for this? How could we not only raise money, but raise people's awareness? I mean, there's just this whole thing with invisibleness that we have with homeless people. Mm-hmm. And we tend to want to forget about them because it's painful for us. We think it's painful for us, but what about for them? So this whole thing where we don't look them in the eye as they ask us maybe for something. And I wanted to get rid of that invisibleness and respect the humanity that we all deserve. So when somebody comes up to me, and I had grown tired of this happening to me in Columbus and also in New York, wherever I am, people, hey, could you give me a dollar? Could you give me, I don't have this, I don't have that. What are the ways we can approach that? But also, what's a way where we can take something that's right in our face and that we've been ignoring? Because homeless people talk about that feeling of, after a while, just feeling invisible, like nobody cares for me, and they just want to approach you. So you know what? What I learned is you don't have to give them money. You don't have to give them, if you don't want, you can suggest things that they can do. You can buy them food. But even more important than that, acknowledge them as humans. And then take, so this that's what inspired this guy. How can I get people to know about that acknowledgement of something greater than all of this, which is our humanity?
Michelle Heritage, by the way, she's executive director of the Community Shelter Board, and she'll be joining us in the next segment. So we'll look forward to that. So you had this idea of creating a performance to raise awareness about ending homelessness.
Right.
Suddenly the idea that, not suddenly maybe, but it wasn't a conversation with Michelle at a dinner party.
Yeah.
That it was endable.
Yeah.
There's that feeling that this is just something we have to live with.
Something
and it'll
that you
go
just
on
manage,
forever
people
and ever.
Are saying,
and it
yeah.
feels so hopeless sometimes.
Yeah. And what we know is that Michelle and the Community Shelter Board have built a model for ending homelessness that Michelle travels all over the country,
right,
helping other communities with this. So the idea of ending it is the thing that was important for me and I think important to the community. By the way, it's a concert to end homelessness. That means if you don't come to the concert, then you support homelessness.
It's this weekend. And again, you can find more information about that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. So Alexis Wilson, did Byron just rush home, or did he turn to you at the dinner party if you happen to have been there and say, wait a minute, we should do something?
I was there that night, and I think it just sort of came, you know, soon after that party. We didn't talk about it there, or he didn't share it with me. And then you just sort of kick around an idea. You know, we've worked on a few things together. We did what was the first concert?
We did a concert for Columbus.
A concert for Columbus, uh-huh. Partnering with or supporting Mid-Ohio Food Bank and, okay. and another issue. We did the Sweet Rosa Project together and then this one. So you start just taught, you know, he came to me with this idea. It was always something very close to my heart growing up in New York. I was always very strongly affected by homeless people on the street. And for whatever reason, I was always a magnet for them to come and talk to me. And I loved hearing their stories. So that coupled with, I think, which I just had an aha moment recently about this, I think that my other connection is just this issue of abandonment, which I felt from another completely different place, which you know about. So it seemed a no-brainer. The only question was how to then translate this idea and get it up on a stage in a way that would not, pandering's not the right word, but you want to make sure you're doing it right. if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You're there for an evening of entertainment, but you're also there to perhaps widen people's perception about this reality that we deal with. So then we just started talking about it more and more.
Yeah, because we're not talking about, by the way, before we move on, author of the book, Not Just Black and White.
Not So Black
not
and
so
White.
Not So Black and White. I didn't have it written down. I apologize. I didn't have my notes properly prepared. Not So Black and White is the book that we were talking about. Alexis Wilson was on the show a couple years ago now. Mm-hmm. It's hard to believe.
I know.
So you can check in our archives if you want to learn more about that. And, of course, you can find it anywhere online. It's not just a show that people who can afford to come pay to go to see, and they're entertained, and by the way, the proceeds go to
community shelter
mm-hmm. board or whatever right. charity it might mm-hmm. be. It was more than that, and it's interesting to hear you talk about. Did you bring something? Was it an opportunity to express yourself in a way you hadn't before?
Because it was a topic that I had never thought about putting into stage form. We started with the music, because that's sort of, especially for Byron, an easy place for him to start. And then the way that I approach things, I want to know the story, and how can we move it along? What is the narrative, so that we aren't just doing, you know, a song and a thing? And it's sort of disjointed, but it has some kind of cohesiveness to the evening. So then I thought, and I struggled with it a little bit. I still wasn't finding what I call my red thread, the thing that kind of pulls you through the night. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, you know, it needs characters. And so that's when I came up with the idea to create, which ended up being three separate monologues, very different at the beginning, the middle, and close to the end, of three very different characters who are dealing with and struggling with their very different bouts with being on the street.
And the music, of course, one of the pieces, When We All Get to Heaven. Tell us about that,
well,
Byron.
Interesting to use that song. We chose that because in all, you know, I visited homeless camps, which I didn't even know that there were camps for homeless. I visited homeless shelters. I looked at videos. I talked to homeless people. Even with the difficulties that they're going through, there was still this concept of the Lord will make a way somehow. You'd always get, God has a higher plan for me. God is so I think that in everybody's, you know, wherever your religious thing is, there's a little bit of that was always important to the homeless people that we talked to. So we wanted to include that because for some, that becomes the only thing that's left. It's like when you have nothing, maybe there's something you can hold on with that. And so using that music is because I know that music also moved the civil rights movement ahead and forward. So that was very important to include a little bit of gospel music.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the inspiration for a concert to end homelessness. Coming up this weekend, January 17 and 18, it's presented by the Jazz Arts Group in partnership with the Community Shelter Board. For more information, go to the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. With me in the studio, dancer, choreographer, and author Alexis Wilson choreographed the show, and Byron Stripling, renowned trumpeter and artistic director of the Columbus Jazz Orchestra, is with me, and Michelle Heritage, executive director of the Community Shelter Board, coming up. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. The song I used for the billboard at the top of the hour was Smile.
Yeah.
And you and I talked about that a little bit off air, that it's the music that was used in the Charlie Chaplin film, Modern Times.
Yep.
And I got it, finally. And yeah. I get it. It's about, and it there's not a religious component to that.
No.
It's more about that sense of,
well,
take a step forward.
Yeah,
we'll find it around the next corner.
Those words, and that's that. This concert is an optimistic, uplifting concert. So when I say to you, smile, though your heart is aching, smile, even though it's breaking. When there are stars in the sky, you'll get by. When I say those words, you immediately feel the happiness that is Charlie Chaplin. And so that's why we have to do that song, too. Even in the midst of all our pain, all our heartbreak, he says, all you got to do is smile. You know, and that's the beginning of it.
Is that a story?
It is a story, and it's actually the first character, which I'm actually doing, and then I have an actor who's playing the two other characters, Mary. She opens the show pretty much after we see our series of stills that will be projected, and we have the first tune. And Mary is sort of almost your stereotypical person on the street, if you will, the most recognizably person that's struggling with something. She's kind of layered and laden. You could call her crazy. She wants to rattle you. You know, she's kind of messing with whoever it is that's on the street or in the audience. But then in the middle of her monologue, we come to realize sort of what's at the core of what happened to her. And then she ends by actually, she's reminiscing about her husband that she lost. And she starts singing that song because it was one of his favorite songs. So I actually sing that too, not in the same way.
It makes you think about the fact that not only is someone homeless, but there's usually a trauma associated with it. And when we've been traumatized, what do? We go home. We curl into a ball or whatever we do.
Right.
But that most basic need isn't there for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was very struck by something that, and knew it, but when I heard Michelle say this, it really stuck with me. She talked about how, you know, regardless of what the story is that have led people to be on the street, because there are a myriad reasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
But she says, know that these people are struggling. They are struggling with whatever it is that has landed them there. They're not just, you know, living. We sometimes see some people that seem like they're happy to be on the street, but these people have either checked out, or they're dealing with mental illness, or, you know, XYZ.
Or they're trying to smile.
Or they're trying to smile, but the point is that they are struggling with it. Yeah.
It is easy to just think of them as characters in the movie of our life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Minor characters, though.
Right. And actually, one of the things that I try to set out to do with these different monologues is to sort of show a depiction. With each monologue, it actually gets closer, more recognizably closer to you and me.
Yes.
So that by the last monologue, this woman who has these two children who's been living in her van, you wouldn't know necessarily that she was someone who is struggling and forced to be in a situation where she's on the street. She's smart. She's clear. She wants to work. But she's fallen on tough times, and this is where she's landed.
I think it's really important for people to realize how close anybody could be to this predicament. 3 months of unemployment for some people, and let's say during the same time, a little medical issue that you had could land you on the street. It could be you, it could be I, it could be anybody. So these are not some crazy people. This is you and me who we're talking about. And that's why the invisibleness that we talked about before, we have to bring that into us. We have to acknowledge their humanity, as we said before.
And let's face it, I mean, the performing arts, it's rife with all of a sudden people dropping off the face of, you know, off the map, and you're wondering whatever happened to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
right.
There isn't a lot of security for most people.
Yeah.
Particularly now. I mean, with the economic thing that everybody is dealing with in some way. So it becomes even more of a reality.
Byron and Alexis, too, what spurred you was the idea of ending homelessness, that we can end homelessness. What surprised you in the process of your research for this that you might not have picked up on the streets of New York when you lived there, Alexis or Byron, that you know, we think we know, but don't?
Well, a couple things. When I went to visit the first homeless camp, I was taken around by some people from the community shelter board. We literally pulled into one of the most exclusive buildings. I won't say what it is, but it was like the building to live in Columbus, Ohio. And
if you're of a certain financial.
Right.
That's where you parked.
That's where we parked. And I said, well, why are we coming here? They're like, oh, we're just going to walk a couple blocks. So we parked there. We walked like two blocks. And there I saw these tents set up. And these people were living. So that, I mean, you can read about homelessness and you can talk about it. But I think for me, going out and being there and talking to the people, that's what changed my life. I mean, I wouldn't be able to give the honesty to this concert had I not done that. So that was a big surprise for me.
And that was very different for you and your experience.
Yes.
Just talking, engaging to them.
Well, talking and engaging. My wife has always been one to tell me, she's the one when we lived in New York, says you need to just acknowledge these people as they walk by. But also my wife showed me that there's beauty in everyone. So when we would walk by a homeless person, specifically when we were in New York, we were always on the street walking, she would say, look at how beautiful his hair is. And I'd be thinking, this guy looks like a drunk to me. But she always saw the beauty in these people. Look at those beautiful shoes he's wearing. Look at, she always found beauty in everything. And that's the humanity I'm talking about. And I learned so much from that, you know.
That's Byron Stribling and Alexis Wilson. They're with us for the next segment. We're talking about the inspiration behind their latest collaboration. It's called A Concert to End Homelessness. It's this weekend, presented by the Jazz Arts Group in partnership with the Community Shelter Board. You can learn more about it. Go to WOSU.org/allsides, and we'll have a link there for you. If you stick with us, we'll continue our conversation and bring in Michelle Heritage of the Community Shelter Board and get more down in the weeds about the issues of homelessness. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
In times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words. Let it be. And in my hour of darkness,
welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom. Let it be. Oh, let it be. Let it be. Let it be. Yeah, let it be. Whisper words of wisdom. Let it be.
That is, of course, the Beatles classic Let It Be, performed by singer John Elliott with Bobby Floyd on the keyboard. Both will be part of the cast of A Concert to End Homelessness this weekend. The concert's presented by the Jazz Arts Group in partnership with the Community Shelter Board. If you want to learn more about that, you can go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides and check it out. Two nights only. Still with us, Byron Stripling, Artistic Director of the Columbus Jazz Orchestra. Also with us, Alexis Wilson, choreographer for the performance, dancer, author as well. And joining us now to discuss how the proceeds of this event will be spent. And the plight of the homeless in Central Ohio is Michelle Heritage, Executive Director of the Community Shelter Board. Michelle, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So Byron was moved by the idea, and you and I have talked about it before, that we could end homelessness.
And we're going to.
So does that depend on a definition of homelessness?
Here's the thing. We will never prevent people from losing their housing completely. We'll never be able to eradicate that. There's going to be lots of reasons why folks lose their housing. Could be that they had an issue with their landlord, they lost a job, and they weren't able to get a job in time to begin to get a new place and pay the rent. Their place could have burned down. They could have been doubled up with friends and family, and they've been asked to move along. There's going to be lots of reasons, continually, why people lose their housing. But people don't have to become homeless. And, you know, homelessness is an experience that you should have for a short period of time. If you lose your housing, you may become homeless, but you should never become a homeless person. And there's a big difference there. And that's why, you know, you and I've talked, you will not hear me talk about homeless people. I will talk about people who are experiencing homelessness, because we need to be really clear that, you know, homelessness, frankly, is a state of being in this country that has not been with us all that long. And much of the homelessness that is being experienced by people both in our community and nationally, you know, I talk about is kind of a result of a lot of failed policies over a lot of years. It's been death by a thousand cuts. And, for example, I had someone ask me the other day, they said, hey, if we don't get these unemployment benefits extended, what's going to happen? And I said, I'm going to have more business as a direct result of that decision made in D.C. And so when we kind of think about that, there's solutions we have to get people back on their feet. But I think as things happen, people will lose their housing, but they don't have to stay in a state of homelessness.
When we talk about events like coming up this weekend, a concert to end homelessness, I know I'm just going to jump in. I'm just going to jump forward and say, I know this is about more than money.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole bunch of things this is about. Number one, there's something about the arts that can soak into our soul in a way that only they can. And the thing that's incredible about this show that Byron and Alexis have put together is you will experience this messaging and the thoughtfulness that occurs with it in so many ways. As Alexis has put together these characters that are incredibly moving. And she's so spot on with who they are and what they're experiencing and how close they are to our humanity. And Byron's going to sing, and there's others that are going to sing, and the music and the jazz and then the words in the music. And then you have these, you know, gorgeous dancers that are going to be jumping all over the place and expressing.
You've been peeking,
it.
Right?
I have. I've seen this a little bit. And I laughed and I cried and I felt, you know, amazing. And so this is a huge gift. This is a huge gift to this community, to people experiencing homelessness, and certainly to the Community Shelter Board. We want to make a little bit of money because I need money in order to be able to end homelessness. But the fact is, people are going to understand this issue in a way that they haven't before because they have seen this show.
If you have a question or comment, you can join the conversation, 614-292-8513. Audience members are asked to bring towels, deodorant, bars of soap. What else are you asking for?
We're really wanting hygiene items that might be easy to carry, you know. So
okay.
You walk in and you've got a breast pocket in your coat or you've got a purse, a few tubes of toothpaste if you want to do some towels. If you think about the basic kinds of things that we might take for granted that we need on a day-to-day basis, mm-hmm. You get up in the morning, you take a shower, you put shampoo on your head, you know, you wash your body with soap, you dry off with a towel, you put on a pair of socks. All of those kinds of things become a premium item for folks that are experiencing homelessness.
And if, yeah, Byron?
I just, you know, all these things. I'm so inspired by Michelle, but
absolutely.
So many things I've never thought about. And one of the things that she shared with me was that I've got to first get the person stabilized.
Yeah.
You know, if I want to help you find a job, then, you know, let me get you in a shower, get you cleaned up, then we can sit down and talk to you. And,
just like the rest of us. So yeah, it's like, well, you know what, I gotta take a shower or
needs.
I gotta get
yes.
ready.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me get you a coat so you're not cold. Let me get you know, some clothes. And then let's just sit down and figure out how I can help you. And maybe there's benefits out there for you that you aren't even aware of. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're about ready for Social Security. Michelle can work with you to get that. All these things that you're entitled to anyway, but you've gotten so off kilter because of what happened to you that there are actually things out there that can help you. So let me just get you stabilized a little bit, and then I can begin to help you. And that was valuable to learn that.
Absolutely. It's that old Psych 101, you know, Maslow's hierarchy. We all took it. Mm-hmm. And on the very bottom of that gorgeous pyramid is food and shelter. Mm-hmm. And we can't really think about much else unless we have those two things established. And to Byron's point, you know, folks really experience conditions that kind of pile on each other. So they may have a really significant medical condition. For example, for people who are experiencing long-term homelessness, they die about 20 to 25 years before the rest of us. Their average death age is 62. And it's usually from chronic conditions left untreated, diabetes, stroke, heart attack, cardiac disease. And so it's those kinds of things that if we can get you stabilized, address medical needs, maybe you have some mental health or you're using substances in a way that aren't really helpful to you and your functioning, we need to get all that addressed and get you linked to the things that can keep you stabilized and from coming back into the system.
I mean, people are going to have long-term problems with substance abuse, with mental health issues, that kind of thing. That's not going to end.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
But they don't have to suffer from homelessness because of it.
That's right. And so, you know, we need to think about what are the ways in which we put systems and programs together so that we talk about catching people in the prevention state of it. So, for example, we could just build a lot of emergency rooms in our hospitals and big giant cardiac wings and wait for everyone to have heart attacks. And when they have them, we could do a great job treating their heart attack. Or we could begin to think about wellness and prevention and also engaging in the kinds of therapies that keep you from going all the way there. And so we've got some folks that are really experiencing some very severe mental health and substance use issues. And some of it has to do with there's just not enough treatment available and there's not the kinds of treatment available that we really need.
Yeah, and that's true. And yet I don't – that's remains a problem.
Yes.
I mean, we have to have people – in schools now being trained.
Yes.
And they're not.
Yes. Less people are coming into my business to do this work.
Right.
But here's what I will say that I think is hopeful, is I think this young generation coming right now is more socially aware at a young age, and they're looking for ways in which they can help, which may be different than what we've traditionally seen. We need those professionals trained. We need all of that, absolutely. And I really do think with the expansion of Medicaid and the state, however you do or don't feel about it, for me, for my people, it is going to be a real boon to them because they're going to be able to get the kinds of treatment that they have not been able to in the past because they've just not had insurance. And then what happens is they use emergency rooms and they maybe use high cost kinds of treatment. You know, I would say
at the last minute when it doesn't do as much good.
We're going to pay as a community one way or another. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be fantastic if we put things together in a way that a human being didn't have to suffer a whole bunch of time before they got the kind of treatment they needed? And what I can say in this community is we really have a pretty amazing integration of systems. Our mental health system is very highly integrated with us. And as we roll out this new single adult system that will be fully in swing by next fall, our mental health and substance use providers have come with us like this. And they've said, we understand that these are both our people. These are all of our people, and we both need to come together, and we need to bring our core competencies to bear on this issue for this human being to relieve them of suffering and get them rehoused and stabilized.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Remind us about the new facility that's opening up, or you break ground. You know, it's there.
Had an open house yesterday.
Yeah. Okay.
This is super exciting for me. So we have been working for 2 years on this single adult redesign. And we have the national program for families, the whole system that we run for families, nationally recognized. People come all over the country to see the work we're doing there. And we made a commitment many years ago that no family would ever be homeless on the street. And, you know, they have gold standard outcomes. Families move through in 20 days. They get housed. They rarely come back again. They get stabilized. It's all there. For single adults, we have not made that commitment. Our system has been struggling. There's been a significant increase in men and women experiencing homelessness. We've had long waiting lists, especially concerning, you know, I will tell you, our women sometimes waiting 2 weeks to get a bed, which is outrageous. And so we said, we have to make a commitment. We have to have a new system. We have to do something that's national in how it's going to be affecting the country even. And we know what to do with families. Let's develop a system. Took 2 years. We had over 300 folks involved with us, many organizations, and we built it out. And this new building is one of the aspects of this build out. And the exciting part is it helps us to right size the system. So we're going to add some beds. It helps us to make sure that we have a bed available for every human being that needs it that day. So we will build in permanent flexible capacity. You know, we site a shelter every winter and we have plenty of capacity in the winter. And that, you know, we open on November 15th, we close the thing on the 15th of March, and we go right back into waiting lists again. When we open this new site, no more waiting lists ever. I will tell you that for me, that is something that it is in conceivable that we wouldn't commit to that, and we have. And in this community where I grew up and where I have been raising my children, it makes me so proud to think that we are making this commitment, that no human being will be on the streets, and that everyone that wants a bed will be able to get it, and then that the services that are going to be linked to them are literally, and they are going to be some of the most cutting-edge, forward-thinking ways in which we interact with folks experiencing homelessness. And we are taking a giant leap forward on this thing, and so I'm really excited about this new shelter opening.
We talked earlier with Paul Griffin, founder and president of the Possibility Project in New York City.
It was really interesting.
And it was interesting. And one component of his program involves foster children. Mm-hmm. And there's always been a really high rate of impending homelessness in the foster community, you know, in the foster care community, that these kids head out to. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not sure. Now, there are programs now in place to help get them prepared for college and get them into college and that kind of a thing. But what about that component and children, mm-hmm. older children?
Yeah, interesting. National research will show you that kids do not age out of foster care generally into the system. Mm-hmm. They age out of foster care and then a couple years later into the system.
Okay.
And so what's happened is they've used up all the resources they may have had when they left the system. If they've been couch surfing or staying with friends and family, that arrangement may have, you know, kind of broken up, or they've been asked to move on. And so we find that when you have a young person, 18, 19, 20 years old, that doesn't have family supports and doesn't have a fallback plan, you know, they experience different things. I've got a 20-year-old myself, and I seriously, the kid is an amazing kid. He knows what he's doing. He's going to school. He's working. But if he didn't have me there.
Yeah.
You know, when he calls me, when the car breaks down and I don't have the money, Mom, can you front me the money, or can you pay for it? Or, hey, my car got towed the other day. What does one do when one's car is towed? And they took it, you know, he thought someone stole it. I'm like, no, see the sign? You're not allowed to park there. But it's, yeah.
But that can throw somebody into a catastrophe.
Right. Well, how do you get to your job? Like, how do you,
How do you get to your job? You know, you have to show up every day and you have to be on time. If you're sick, you have to call. There's so many things that young people, we take for granted in teaching them. And I think what we have to develop and what we've begun to develop as part of the system redesign with our providers that are specifically focused on young folks like Huckleberry House and Star House and Buckeye Ranch is, what do we need to build in this community to surround these young folks? One of the things we're doing for the second year in a row is we're hyper-focused in our point-in-time count, which will occur in about a week, on capturing those young people between 18 and 24. We do believe we're going to need a specialized team of case managers in our homeless system to work specifically with these young folks. Their needs are different than some of our other folks that may have been experiencing homelessness for longer periods of time. So that's what we're working on.
I don't know what more to ask about the show because I want people to go to it.
Sweet.
You should go to the show. It is going to be so amazing.
And I think one of the great things about the show, it's music, but it's uplifting. But we also have, as Alexis, her characters that she's created. But we also have three dancers that will be involved in there. And it's a whole bunch of stuff then packed into 90 minutes. And after the show, Alexis and I will talk to Michelle, after the show about, you know, these things. Because when you hear, as you guys just heard, when you hear Michelle talk.
Oh, yeah, I can listen to her all day.
You're just inspired to, like, wow, this could really happen. And I think it's so important in something like homelessness that you have somebody at the head of it that has that kind of realistic optimism.
Yeah. You know? And in creating these evenings, it was so wonderful and unique to be working on something that, even though it's for the most part fictionalized, these characters, but I went to Michelle to make sure that I was on the right track, because we're depicting something that is very real, and we want to make sure that that component is right and we're sending the right message out there.
Alexis Wilson, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Terrific. Thank you for having me.
Alexis Wilson, dancer, author, choreographer, and also Byron Stripling. Thank you so much for joining us today. Trumpeter, artistic director of the Columbus Jazz Orchestra, Byron Stripling. They are together putting together a concert to end homelessness. Mm-hmm. Michelle Heritage, thanks for joining us.
Sure.
It's in conjunction with the Community Shelter Board, of which Michelle is the executive director. Thanks a lot for listening. Sending us on our way today is a rendition of What's Going On with John Elliott on vocals and Bobby Floyd on keyboard. Both will be performing with Byron Stripling at the concert to end homelessness this weekend. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.